Hey, Gore friends, this is Story.
And Mars.
And here we are. We're back with another episode doing deep dives into horror movies. Mm-hmm. And this week was Mars's pick.
Yes.
Mars, tell us about your nostalgic pick for us.
This six M&F and sense.
All six of the senses. We're going to learn about the six. Since here we go. And welcome back. So The Sixth Sense, mm-hmm. Mars. Why this one? Why this movie?
To be completely honest, I just
love honesty.
I'm honest with you guys, always honest. And you know, I've been feeling a little under the weather the past couple of days, and I kind of wanted to do a film that was kind of easy on the eyes and ears, so mm-hmm. nothing too like mentally draining. Something that was kind of easy to take notes on. You know, it was between this and two other movies, and this is the way less intense one out of the three. And I was like, yeah, I don't need to be stressed out watching Ish this week. Like, I just need something to relax, not relax, but just take it easy.
And this it's a lot calmer than a lot of other movies. We don't get we don't get jump scares really. So, nope. I mean, it's nice, a nice eerie movie.
Yeah, it definitely, it's considered a, what is it, thriller? It's considered, according to IMDb, a drama mystery thriller. I would call it a paranormal drama myself.
Yeah, that seems more accurate, but yeah, for sure. If you guys don't know about this movie, it's classic.
It is classic.
M. Night Shyamalan. This is what made us think everything after this by him would be great. This is the movie that kind of set that bar.
Yeah.
And left us disappointed after a couple of movies.
Yep.
So this the synopsis, according to IMDb, reads, "A boy who communicates with spirits seeks the help of a disheartened child psychologist." And that's pretty straightforward. That really is pretty true to the movie as far as it goes. The film came out in 1997. Personally, I remember renting it from Blockbuster around 98, 99, mm-hmm. and watching it at home. And that was my first experience with the movie. It is starring Bruce Willis as Malcolm Crowe, mm-hmm. Haley Joel Osment as Cole Sear, Toni Collette.
M&F and Toni. Oh my God. I was like,
looking
the queen.
Like a whole snack.
Whole other person. Like, it took me, snack. Like, I saw her name in the credits mm-hmm. and I knew she was in it, but it took a while to process that was her. I was like, wait a minute, that's the baddie right there. That's the squeal queen.
Yeah. Okay. And Olivia Williams as Anna Crow. And I have an honorable mention this Ooh. Episode. Donnie Wahlberg as Vincent Gray.
Okay, once again, saw his name in the credits. Crazy. Did not know who he was. If you guys don't know, Saw two. You're not Jigsaw,
Matthews.
Bitch.
You're not Jigsaw, bitch. Go back and listen to it. Donnie Wahlberg.
Yes. For no reason. I was like, what?
Saw. Oh yep. Yep.
No reason.
Eric Matthews out here. Not Jigsaw, bitch.
So we didn't deserve anyway.
We don't. Freaking Donnie served. Okay, I'm gonna talk about it later. For now, though, let's get into funny, cool, scary. Mars, did you laugh?
I don't remember like the time. So, yeah, if you guys don't know already, you guys should know, first of all, the twist. And second of all, you guys should know that we go deep into these movies. So all the spoilers up ahead. But that being said, how does Malcolm not know that he's dead for a year, my guy? Like, you've been I know it's digging into the plot a lot. I know it's digging way into it, and I should not dig into it. But just from watching it again, because, like, after the first scene and he gets shot, it just cuts away to the next fall. So I'm like, how this whole time you didn't question, you didn't know?
Well, you know, we don't even know if he was an active spirit for a year. Like, we don't know what he's been doing. He probably had amnesia. He possibly was doing like a residual haunting thing and then branched out.
Yeah, I wish we got details about, like I said, it's digging a lot. It's kind of like an It Follows situation. Like, once you dig into it and start tearing it apart, kind of ruins it.
M. Night did it that way just to add on to the twist. Yes. So that to like keep you guessing, like, oh, okay, this happened a year later, so he survived the gunshot wound.
So that was like one of those things I kind of I'm like, they could
change that. Was our first sign that after this it would be a little rough for our boy.
Mm-hmm. Like, watching it again, I'm just like, how do you not realize? Because, you know, there's a few minor things that you notice watching again that, okay, yeah, it makes sense that he's dead. But that part specifically, I'm like, how would you not notice any of these things? But moving forward, stuttering Stanley.
Oh my God. Of course you would laugh at stuttering Stanley.
Because the teacher.
He had it coming.
Because he did. It's like, okay.
It was awful.
I'm like, he's not crazy. This kid is not crazy.
You're making it seem you're going to tell him he's not. It was literally a courthouse. Like, people get hung in courthouses. That's history. Yeah, like, he's trying to like sugarcoat and cover up the history.
Yeah, I'm like, this kid is not lying. And then he was looking at the kid like he was crazy, and that triggers the kid. He was like, don't look at me like that. Like, I'm crazy. And then he called him out and was calling him Stuttering Stanley. And I also laughed at the kid that was at the chalkboard, because that kid was just great.
The squeak of the chalk. They hung people here. Squeak!
Yep. That kid was amazing, because he was also at the party later when he was trying to show him the penny trick. And he was like, that's stupid. Like, that's so I also love that kid. Honorable mention, that kid right there, amazing. He deserves all the roles out there. Definitely a fan. But that's all I have for funny.
Okay, I have a couple of things to add. So I liked the toll booth lady story, where Cole was telling Doc about his dad leaving, and now he lives with a lady that works toll booths, and he said he wondered if, like, what her bathroom situation was like. It was like, does she just hold it all day? Or, like, when does she go pee? Like,
she's working at a
toll booth. There's no bathroom in the toll booth. And I never thought about that. It's like, how do they get out of the toll booths? Like, when you drive up to San Francisco, where do they go?
Yeah, like, it's, they probably like set it days for free for a few minutes. Like, okay, you guys can just go through for free, because I have to go to the bathroom. Like,
no, what? They definitely switch shifts, but I guess I don't know.
For those who deal with toll booths,
that's crazy. Let us know. But I just thought it was funny that they're just having like their theories about toll booth people and when they go to the bathroom.
Yeah, it's a very like realistic conversation, like, just regular, like, who think, like, M. Night, like, what made you think of this conversation?
And then the kid Derek was acting in the school play, and at first I was like, he's too good, like, should it kids' plays aren't that good most of the time. 9 times out of 10, I feel like he's just delivering his lines too well. But then in the next scene, we see him in a commercial on TV, and Cole gets mad and throws his shoe at the TV.
I laughed.
I was like, oh, he's supposed to be a good actor. It's just another reason for Cole to hate him.
Yep.
And I just thought it was so funny, because it did nothing whatsoever to serve the plot that this kid was an actor, other than, like, you know, earlier on, we see him pretending to be friends with Cole. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it kind of ties into him pretending to be a good person and a good mm-hmm. friend, but really he's just a bully. Mm-hmm. And then in that same scene, Cole and his mom had on gloves and cardigans at the dinner table because it was so cold in there. And she got frustrated with the thermostat. She was like, I don't care what they say, that thing's broken. And Cole has those big leather gloves on and she's like, take those off. And it's like, bro, it's 50 degrees in the house. Like, let him wear the gloves. I don't understand. And then she sent him to bed without dinner. And I recently was watching The Twilight Zone and I noticed that was a thing.
Oh yeah, that's totally people. A thing. Yeah.
I never that's understood. So yeah. Your child has to starve yeah. because of what purpose. I don't get it. I don't understand. If anything, my mom made me finish my food because she was like, you're not wasting really it.
Either.
Yeah, she was like, don't waste it.
Yeah, that's you also know, not
hungry
good.
Kids. Somewhere and it's like they're still gonna be hungry.
Yeah,
if I put it away, eat one it of tomorrow. Those
do not work for children. Like it just yeah. makes you have a bad relationship with food. That's a yeah. whole other podcast.
A whole nother show. Whole but other that's show. That's all I have. That's all I have that I wanted to mention. What did you find cool?
I really appreciated the first scene. What I thought was interesting was the way they introduce these characters, what he did for a living in a non I feel like it came out more organically, like you're getting a sense of what he does for a living and you know that he's really he's being rewarded for what he does, that so he's really good at his job. So I really appreciate how he wrote that in there because that could have been in a huge cheesy way,
yeah,
in a cringy way, and just mm-hmm. how the wife was talking to him about you know, these people are appreciating you, even though you put these children first over me. And I feel like it was done really well because they were drunk. And I just think it was worked really well.
There's a lot of good character development happening yeah. with all of that dialogue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really appreciated that. I appreciated the introduction of Cole and his mom when they're having breakfast and the cabinets opening. That was done with a continuous shot, which I really, really appreciated. And you know, there's some more continuous shots in the film as well that I'll talk about later, but I really appreciated that one specifically. And I also want to mention, you know, this kind of goes into scary, but with mom seeing all the pictures with Cole and seeing the spirits in the pictures, I think yeah. as of now on the show, we've only seen that done in a really scary way. And I don't think this was necessarily scary. It was just like, oh, that's weird and that's creepy. I think it was just really well done for his mom to really see that something was off, but she still didn't know what that was. So I thought that was a really cool thing to do. And then, let's see. The change of the tone an hour in. So as we mentioned before, this is more of a paranormal drama. It's definitely mm-hmm. a character piece, kind of similar to Signs, where it's just mostly dynamics and relationships and, you know, just a sprinkle of sketchiness going on. And I just appreciated that. So it's a great gateway horror for that aspect. And then I have some other cool facts about the film itself that I have written down. This is something that I noticed myself while watching it, but throughout the film, Malcolm's wardrobe doesn't really change that much. And all of his clothes are like the same clothes he was wearing when he died, except for like, you know, a coat. You know, he wears a coat, a long trench coat at one time. But for the most part, he wears the same shirt, same pants, the same outfit. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really odd as I was watching it. So that was interesting. And also throughout the movie, apparently Malcolm doesn't move really any objects. He moves a Latin dictionary. He breaks a glass door and uses a tape recorder. But he doesn't interact with anyone besides Cole, which I think is very noticeable when you watch the movie a second time. But yeah, he doesn't open the door. The chair that he sits in with his wife, the chair is already pulled out at that restaurant scene, and then he can't even you know, grab that bill because she takes it away from him before he gets the chance. And it's stuff like that where I, you know, I'm going back to my previous point where I'm like, how do you not notice that everything's kind of laid out for you and you don't have to interact with anything?
Cole kind of explained that now that I think of it. He said they only see what they want to see.
That's true.
Which is why they don't know that they're dead.
That's true. Because at the end, you know, with that door to the basement, you see that book, that table in front of the door, which is why he couldn't open it. So that mm-hmm. that makes sense. That makes sense. But I'm like, he's trying really hard. And also, like, do we even talk about how does he know about Cole? I guess, like, how does he come across Cole in his case? And like, he never talks to his mother or anyone. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, how?
No. So Cole is like a magnet for spirits. And mm-hmm. I feel like Malcolm was just another spirit that was drawn to him, and mm-hmm. he just started stalking him from what I've gathered. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of made up in his mind, oh, this is a child that needs help, so he must be my patient and I have to help. Like, he just started, it was almost residual, like he probably did all these things with Vincent at some point, because mm-hmm. I feel like he was repeating a lot of those things. And he was, you know, just sitting outside waiting for him to leave his house and watching him go to school and get out of school.
Yeah, and I'm like, this isn't and creepy, it took a, bro. Right, like, you're not talking exactly. to any adults. Like, you're not talking to his teachers. You're not talking to his mom. You're not really talking to anyone that surrounds, you know, him.
Yeah. And I was, and like, that's odd. Finally, I feel like we're seeing him finally approach Cole after watching him for probably a couple of days or something. I don't know. And then from there, he's like, oh, we're supposed to meet. We're supposed to have an appointment. I'm a doctor. And he's just like there to help him. And
yeah,
it's funny because Cole never talks to his mom about him ever. Either, really.
Like, when he's sitting in the living room with his mom. And
I kind of feel like Cole always knew, which I'll get into that more.
Oh, yeah. I feel that too. Yeah. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure. I do feel like Cole always knew as well. And I'm like, Cole, say something. Anyways, if you see something, say something. but also the last names of these two main characters kind of reveals their, you know, their fates. We have Cole Sear, which is pronounced Seer. because he's able to see, you know, stuff that people can't. And also with Crow, Malcolm Crow, crows are usually associated with death. So I thought that was also
And a group
really
of crows is called a murder.
Yeah, exactly. So really, really fun. I love it when, you know, that kind of stuff is thrown in there. And then also, this is something that I noticed visually, but I think is also really cool. I love the use of color in this film. There's a lot of red, red thrown in there. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm gonna leave that for my visuals later, but I just wanted to point that out, the use of red, because he wanted to use red to depict when the world of the living and the world of the dead would cross over. And I'll go ahead and say some examples once we hit the visuals. But yeah, those are all the things that I have for Cool.
For sure. I have things to add.
Cool.
So specifically to add to your point about the dialogue between the doc and his wife in the beginning, I feel like he downplayed his work a lot. And that's mm-hmm. what that conversation was really about. And her being offended by it mm-hmm. was what, you know, really got to me and stood out to me, was she was like, you're not taking this seriously and you don't realize you've made sacrifices to get here. Like, you mm-hmm. don't real, it's mm-hmm. almost like he mm-hmm. didn't realize that she was probably at some point teetering on filing for divorce because mm-hmm. he just ignores her that much. Mm-hmm. And she had to be like, hey, you know, I made sacrifices for you to get here too. This is about both of us. It's not just about you. So yeah, we are going to celebrate it. So I really liked that insight to her character, and that she was probably getting detached from the marriage toward the end and trying to rekindle that and reignite their spark. The four shadows that I picked up on, Cole seemed to be afraid of Dr. Crow for a while, like their first few meetings. Mm-hmm. He seemed very hesitant to like mm-hmm. talk to him, and the way he looked at him just kind of showed like, I don't know if you're a real person or not. Like yeah. you could tell Cole was like, the gears are turning, like, are you a real person? And then he would say things like, are you a good doctor? Like, are you the mm-hmm. good kind of doctor? And that's a weird question to ask. Like, what do you mm-hmm. mean, are you a good doctor? Like, hopefully there aren't a bunch of, I know they exist, like bad doctors exist, but hopefully people aren't just out here getting PhDs just to be bad people
yeah.
and mm-hmm. not help people. So work. It's funny. Yeah, put in all that work, years of work just to be a bad person. So it's funny that he said, you know, are you a good doctor? Like, it's almost like he's probing, are you the good kind of ghost or are you a bad kind? I feel like that was like a trick question. And then I like that they waited until after Cole shares his secrets to show us what he sees. It's like he was also sharing his secret with the audience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we had clues and we had hunches, and most people could probably figure out like, hey, this kid obviously is seeing ghosts or mm-hmm. hearing them or has some kind of paranormal experience going on. But it's not until he tells us and we're looking at him from Malcolm's point of view that they're like, okay, now you're allowed insight into Cole's life. And that's that turn mm-hmm. that we mm-hmm. see, because mm-hmm. at first the main character is Malcolm. And mm-hmm. so we're seeing everything the way he's seeing it, trying to figure out what he's trying to figure out. And then it flips and it's like, okay, now you get to see all the horrors that he lives through throughout a day in his life. And it's actually really messed up and really hard to watch a little baby go through.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like the doctor's wife might also be sensitive, Anna. She says some really interesting things, and she does some really interesting things. So she made a reservation that I'm guessing was probably one of their favorite restaurants for their anniversary. And she's sitting there, and it's almost like she can see him at times. I know she can't, but maybe she feels him. And then mm-hmm, she tells him happy anniversary before mm-hmm. she leaves. And then in the jewelry, I guess she has like a vintage shop or something. Yeah. And so she's telling the couple about a ring that they're interested in. And she's saying some things about like people leaving a part of themselves and their belongings when they die. And she felt like the woman who owned that ring before was probably longing for a man that she couldn't have. And that's so oddly specific.
Yeah.
That it's like, how would you know that? So I feel like she's possibly one of those sensitive people that, you know, are drawn to objects and can tell you the history of an object, like Theo. Mm-hmm, I was getting mm-hmm, Theo mm-hmm, vibes, mm-hmm. like when Theo touches something and she's like, there's wine in that box, or there's something expensive in that box, I think she said. And then Anna's like, oh, like, yeah, people leave parts of themselves in all these items. And it's, she could just tell you about that item's history. I thought that was really cool, and I never picked up on that before when I watched the movie, so I thought that was really neat. And then of course the twist reveal of Malcolm being dead. I thought the way they went about it was just like him getting shot all over again. Mm-hmm. And you kind of feel that whirlwind with him. So I thought that was neat. What did you find scary?
Scary. This movie doesn't have, you know, jump scenes. Like, not really jump scenes necessarily. Like, besides just a ghost, like, randomly walking across the hallway or something. That happens a few times in the film. So there are some disturbing imagery. Like we have, you know, people hanging in the hallway at the school, and, you know, just the people that, like the ghosts that Cole just encounters sometimes. Like I said, I did think the cabinets opening were really scary. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that Cole also, you know, didn't bring that up to his mom. He just kind of took responsibility for those actions. And I'll mention that in my themes later. But, you know, being locked in that small room with that ghost, I did not like that at all.
Not the voice, before he got in there, the voice, I was like, nope, nope, nope.
It was Insidious style, just an evil voice saying things. I didn't. Nope.
I want it.
Nope. Nope. No. 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 No.
Yeah, I hated that voice. Oh god.
So yeah, him getting trapped in there was scary. I do think the, you know, I've seen this movie a few times, so I know it's coming, so it's not as scary. But the scene where he's in the tent and like the top of the tent's like popping open, and that girl is vomiting in the tent, I think that was a really great kind of deception with horror, because you think, you know, something's gonna come out from outside of the tent and she's already in there with him. I think that was a really great way of having that done. But other than that, it's mostly just a lot of disturbing imagery in this film. Nothing really like you're on the edge of your seat or you don't want to look at the screen type situation.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I pretty much found all the same things pretty scary. Specifically, like it just felt like everything was starting to pop off in his apartment at night. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden it's just like crazy consistent activity, and it's like at 100 all the time at night. And I just like, just keep a bottle in your room, Cole. Don't leave the tent, you know, like I was like, don't go to the bathroom, Cole. Just get a bottle, wet the bed if you have to, just stay put. What do you have for the acting and visuals?
Man, chef's kiss. You guys, Tony alone. Just so great.
You're gonna have back problems from carrying all the movies.
She got nominated, I think, for best supporting, as she should. Like, she's just so, like, that car scene at the end with them and they're having the conversation, like, that was her audition scene. And man, the feels. Freaking Cole, just that sweetheart, the precious baby, the precious child. I was like, he must be protected at all costs. So very well casted as a, you know, shy, timid kid going through stuff. Really great stuff there. So yeah, no complaints from anyone in the cast whatsoever. I think everyone pulled their weight very, very well. Visually, I did, like I said, I mentioned lots of red. So, you know, in terms of red, I'm going to mention, there's a lot more than what I'm going to say now, but I'm just going to mention a few. But first of all, there's a lot of red buildings that Cole walks past in Philly. And then, you know, the church where Cole and Malcolm first meet, the door to that church is red. The statue that Cole takes from the church has a red robe. The doorknob to Malcolm's basement is red. Cole's school uniform jacket is red, like maroon color. So there's a lot of red being used in this film. So if you guys watch it again, just pay attention to all the red notes. The dress that Malcolm's wife wears in the restaurant is red.
As well as in the first scene when we first meet them, I wrote down like she had this blue red dress. Like the blue was almost iridescent and changed colors in the light. And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah. So I really love the use of red and having that represent things. It's kind of like how I like to direct stuff myself. So I just really, really appreciated that. And let me see, anything else for visuals? I think I did notice some cool tones in the beginning. So the scene right after Malcolm gets shot and he's, you know, kind of stalking Cole, we have some blue hues, some cool tones to make the red pop out even more. And I thought that was really cool as well. But that's all that I have for visuals here, really. And also just some really great continuous shots as well. There are some great ones. Like I said, the one with the cabinets, and then also the one with the car accident scene at the end. You know, as you're kind of like going through all the cars and you're going up into their car. But there were some really great continuous shots too.
For sure. To add to that, that blue and red dress in the beginning was killer. And I wonder if she was also wearing red because she has similarities to Cole, like feeding into my fan theory, if you will, about Anna being sensitive as well in some way. And then, you know, Malcolm always kind of donning blue and neutral tones, and then, you know, the people around him being unique and special enough to understand him and see him. I thought was interesting. Also, Vincent Gray's breakdown, Donnie, that's why he's my honorable mention. His whole,
my God, it was he so good.
Commanded that scene. He controlled it so freaking well. The dirty lost underwear like 45 with a nice touch.
Pounds for that role.
He just performed his butt off. Like, he was totally unrecognizable and just in that character. That scene alone, I'm like, give him all the awards.
Yeah,
please hand it to him. Plenty of tracking shots. I dug the glasses that Cole was wearing that used to be his dad's, and he popped the lenses cute. Out. So precious. Like, what? I did notice, I was watching this with a friend, and they had me rewind this part in the school when we see the hanging people that Cole was talking about. It's actually an interracial family. The man was Black, the woman was white, and the son looked biracial or racially ambiguous. And so it kind of paints a picture of the community and what the school was built on. And, you know, clearly it's like, you know, some
it's Philly. Yeah, it's
Philly. They're talking about history, and you see the teacher trying to cover up a part of the history there. And I'm like, damn, that's American history right there. That's how history is taught in our schools. You try to bring up the ugly parts of it, and the teachers look at you like you're crazy, and they're like, yeah, no, we're not going to talk about it. Up do you like his teacher did, and like, I don't know who told you that, but that's not true. And it's like, if it's a courthouse and it's back in the day, you don't think people were hung there. That just didn't happen. That wasn't part of our history. Like, they're gonna find out in another year or two of taking history. Why even go over that if you're not gonna tell the whole thing? So I just thought that was a nice touch to show how history is covered up in schools. And it's like, of course it was because of, you know, the family being interracial, and, you know, it hits you in the face. Also, Cole creating an altar in the tent, I thought that was very interesting. And I'm like, his mom just never legit went in the tent and saw he had a whole ass altar in there. He was going to the church to steal figures, and then he eventually created his own sanctuary. And I like that they threw that in there when
his tent was red, by the way.
His tent was red. But also, Malcolm told him in the church, you know, back in the day, people used the church, used to cry sanctuary and find solace in a church to either escape being arrested, escape people trying to harm them. And then we see his tent, and that's his place, that's his sanctuary. That's where he goes, where he feels like someone's trying to harm him. And that makes the tent mean so much more after seeing that he turned it into a church, essentially an altar. It's like, wow, he fears for his life. And this tent is the only thing that makes him feel safe. So when it's bursting at the seams, oh my God, like, come on. So the last thing is when Cole finally told his mom. That scene, that whole scene is just chef's kiss. From the visuals to the acting, like, that scene,
kid actors sealed the movie. One of the best child actor performances, like, is this movie. You guys know I love my child actors. And too good.
He did amazing. This is, he acted like he'd been acting for 50 years.
Yeah, like, very mature. Very mature.
So great. Let's get into the F-ups. Let's get into the F-ups.
I straight up forgot. That's a whole segment in our show. I don't have many. I mean, without going into my themes too much, I just feel like the mom should have tried to just be there for her child more. Like, I feel like she, he just didn't feel comfortable telling her about what was going on with him because she was going through her own stuff. And I understand that, you know, as a child, it's like, you don't want to, you know, be more stress your parent out even more. So I feel like his mom should have been, you know, pride more possibly, been more involved. Cause, you know, it's stressful for a child and the parent when the divorce is going on. And I just feel like he just didn't feel comfortable, you know, discussing that stuff with her. So I feel like that was an issue. And then also Malcolm not really taking care of Vincent as good as he could have. Cause he obviously came back and had some feels. I'm like, how did he get his address too? Like, how did that even happen? But
phone books back in the day.
Facts. I forget that phone books were a thing. But my main things were just Malcolm dealing with Vincent. You know, Cole and his mom, their dynamic, that could have been better as well. And don't poison your kid. Don't do that. Don't flowers in the attic. Basically flowers in the attic style.
Flowers in the attic was much more insidious.
Flowers in the and attic. Selfish. She makes me so angry.
She just wanted money and she needed to not have the kids to get her money. So but definitely there are a lot of true crime stories where, like, I can't remember the famous one at the time where the mom convinced her daughter that she was terminally ill in a wheelchair.
Miniseries off of
they did the recently. Same thing in Ma where she like convinced her daughter she was sick.
Yeah, it's just awful. It's awful. It's a real thing, you guys.
It is. For me, I was like, first of all, why are you following this kid around? Just stop it. That's weird. That's not how you get.
It's weird.
That's not how you get your point across. Just don't do that.
He's eight. This kid is eight.
Yeah, I did. I had mixed feelings about the mom because on one hand, I saw her trying to form a bond with him. She was like, how's your day? Tell me about it. Or like her doing something as simple as, you know, pushing the shopping cart.
She was trying to
bond with him and trying to get through to him so that he would open up to her, but it was him not opening up to her that was driving her crazy. Like she said, she was like, I'm tired in my mind, I'm tired in my body, I'm tired in my heart. Like,
and that whole like taking him away from the table because of the pen. I was like, that's not
she overreacted and she knew she did. That's why she cried after, because she's like, fudge.
She's not trash mom. She's not trash.
She didn't know how to get him to talk to her. I feel like she was blaming herself a lot and internalizing a lot because of her husband leaving for somebody else, the toll booth lady. So it's like, that's like, I have mixed feelings because here's where her FF is. At the party, she's talking to the other moms. You know how moms do, how parents do when they around other adults and the adults start talking about the kids. And she was talking about her issues with Cole and you know, she was kind of making light of it and like, oh, he did this and this, and she was kind of loud about it and he overheard, and That didn't make him feel good. You could see it all over his face. Don't talk to other people, especially people you can't trust about your kid. Like, if you need that much help, and I get it, like, her mom isn't there. She's a single parent. She probably doesn't have friends. It doesn't seem like either of them do.
Yeah.
And so she's like, finally, other parents, I need. It's like the party was more for her. Cole didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
She needed to socialize with those parents, and she needed someone to talk to, but those parents didn't have the problems that her kid was having. So they were looking at it through judgmental eyes. Yeah, I think that's all of my F-ups. That is all of my F-ups. Let's get into what makes this a horror movie and what are the themes.
Movie is thriller, paranormal drama, but what makes this, you know, they label it as thriller, which was kind of interesting, so I'm like, I don't feel on the edge of my seat with this film whatsoever. But I mean, you have a kid that has abilities, and you know, it's more of an emotional piece, seeing it through the eyes of this 8-year-old that sees stuff that he's not supposed to see, while also dealing with a divorce, his parents separating, which is a lot, and then you're also dealing with, you know, a doctor is trying to redeem himself from this previous client that didn't end well. But in terms of themes, I'm gonna say communication. A lot of issues with communication. We have Cole that can communicate, well, he doesn't want to, but he's communicating with the dead. But he has issues communicating his feelings, which I personally can relate to. He has issues communicating his feelings to everyone around him. You know, his mom, his friends, well, not even his friends, just his colleagues and everyone around him. But he has an easier time communicating his feelings with the dead, you know, Malcolm. And then you have Malcolm that has issues communicating with his wife and until the very end, where, you know, Cole kind of gives him advice on how to better communicate with her without telling him that he's dead, which I think is really interesting. But yeah, he finally finds a way to communicate with his wife properly, and he finally finds a way to, you know, communicate with Cole properly. After a while, he gains his trust and is able to communicate with him. And then Cole is able to communicate with his mom at the end in a proper way, so his mom understands what he's going through. So we just see all this growth in terms of communication. And, you know, Cole's also able to communicate with the dead in a healthy way as well. Because, you know, before he was just instantly scared of all of the ghosts. And then with the girl in his tent, he was like, okay, let me actually take the time and listen to what you have to say, and we can kind of go from there. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say communication is a big theme with this film.
Wow, that's incredible. Y'all hear that? Y'all hear that? Mars out here giving themes. Mars is not even a reach. That probably is like the theme. That's probably it right there.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, be better with my themes. I'm trying to do better with the themes, and that's
always good. Always good with the themes, man. To add to that, I didn't write communication specifically, but more so just dealing and allowing yourself to receive help and be help for others. I felt like a lot of this was about like suppression and suppressing things and ignoring the obvious and just trying to go through the motions that so you're fine, because I do that. And so that's what I picked up on. Malcolm's character didn't want to see that he was dead. He didn't want to see that his wife was in pain. He's like, oh, I wish I could communicate with her the way we used to. And it's like, how did you communicate with her before? Or why aren't you trying to figure out how to do that? Why are you out here trying to help another kid?
Which also just like goes back to him, you know, putting his work first. He was in denial about that. Very much about, you know, his wife not being second to his job. So that's a good point.
For sure. And then Cole always keeping his, according to, you know, the pictures he saw on the wall, he's been this way literally his entire life. Relatable. Even his baby pictures, there were orbs there. And I'm guessing, you know, some of those orbs were probably his grandmother. Mm-hmm. And he never told his mom, like, his entire life he's been dealing with this. But it's gotten to a point where, like, his tent, he's literally bursting at the seams. Like, his abilities are out of his control at this point, and everything is just open, and he doesn't have a tent, he doesn't have a sanctuary to back into. Mm-hmm. Everything's just mm-hmm. out there, and he has no control of it, and it's out of hand to the point where he's in danger of having a breakdown, much like Vincent mm-hmm. did. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's this movie is like a build up to that tipping point, to the burst at the seams. The whole time he's tearing, he's being pulled apart, and so is Malcolm in a lot of ways, and he's getting fed up. I think that's why he broke the glass, the window, mm-hmm. because he's getting increasingly frustrated, because he's suppressing. I think a part of him knows that he's dead, but he's just doesn't want to listen to that.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't want to let his wife go and let her move on. Mm-hmm. And that's where that anger and frustration was coming from, was her moving on and him not having control over that. And then Cole is trying to have control over his abilities and whether or not he sees ghosts, instead of how to cope with it and live with it and yeah. heal from all the traumatic experiences that comes with having this ability. So that's where I saw the themes going as well. But communication is key. What is your relationship status?
I'm gonna say this is a really great, really just a nice one night stand, like someone that, you know, has some deeper conversations, really nice, just a really nice experience. but you know, it was one of those things, I don't, you know, get their number, I don't even remember their name really, you know, a few months later, but I just remember it being a really nice experience. Just because, like I said, like, once you watch it again, you know, you do notice some things, but even now I'm like, oh, this is way slower paced than I remember it being. So it's a great gateway horror for those not into the jump scares, and, you know, more so wants to focus on, you know, the relationships and dynamics and whatnot. But yeah, I don't think I wouldn't go out my way to watch this movie or even catch it if it was on cable.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like it's a great gateway as well. Like I said, I remember renting it from Blockbuster way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And here I am today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a very doable thriller for a lot of younger audiences. It's not too violent or too traumatizing, possibly, for younger audiences to watch, because, you know, like Mars said, you kind of forget about it after a while. It's not one of those things that stay with you the entire day or night.
Yeah.
It's not too mind-boggling or mind-bending to where you're going to be like, wow, he was dead the whole time. You kind of figure it out along the way. And then watching it for the second time is always fun, because then you get to watch it knowing that he's dead, and then picking up on little things that,
yeah, it's just a foreshadowed second, it. Like, knowing that he's dead is kind of like a second aspect. Okay, he's dead. Like, you mm-hmm. just don't focus on that. It's like, okay, cool, it's good to know that, but I'm just, you know, more focused on the story. But yeah, the performances are just great.
So I would put a ring on it, simply because, like, if you're going to collect classic horror movies, or Toni Collette horror movies specifically, like, you need the sixth sense in there.
Yeah.
And I feel like it created a lot of tropes, and a lot of people try to mimic this kind of plot twist. That's true. In horror. Yeah. The "I see dead people" is such an iconic line. Very that much so. I would want my kids to know about it, so mm-hmm. that when things are referenced in other movies, they'll understand it. So yeah, that's the sixth sense.
Woot woot.
We did it. We saw dead people.
We saw and a lot we of made dead it people.
Through. A lot of dead people, but we're all right. We made it through. Up next, we have our businessy stuff. We're gonna take a small break, come back, hit you with that. Sounds like a horror movie.
Ooh.
I don't know what Mars got up her sleeve.
I got stuff.
Here we go. All right. Stay tuned, y'all.
Hello, and welcome to Scare You to Sleep. Have you ever felt like you needed something a little darker than whale noises or counting sheep to unwind at the end of the day? Maybe you've realized horror itself can be a strange but relaxing escape from reality. Every week, I bring to you a myriad of bone-chilling tales, from 19th century dusty tomes to modern up-and-coming authors to truer spooky tales like Reddit mysteries and time slips, all accompanied by a gentle voice and ambient music and sounds so that you feel immersed and lost in your own personal horror story. You can find Scare You to Sleep exclusively on Spotify. So, grab some earbuds, a cozy corner, and join me, Shelby Scott, every Thursday, and let's get unsettled together. Now, go get some sleep. Sweet dreams.
All right, you guys, we are back. Hope you enjoyed our little break with our ad. Support the podcast that support us. But we're going to hop into some businessy stuff before I go and do our Sounds Like a Horror Movie for this week. So we're on all sorts of social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at GoreFriends. We have an email, which is GoreFriendPodcast@gmail.com, which is located in the show notes of this episode. You can go ahead and email us with your own Sounds Like a Horror Movie. We also have a Google Voice number in which you can call. It'll go straight to voicemail. And you can, you know, say some kind words, a movie recommendation, or your own Sounds Like a Horror Movie, and we'll play it on the show. We have a Patreon in which you can donate $1, $5, or $10 a month. Our $5 tier is our most popular, so you can go ahead and check that out. We do have various perks, one of which is our bi-weekly movie nights. And, you know, this week we have one coming up, so if you want to go ahead and catch that, you can do that. And then we also do Gore Gang stickers as well. And then I also want to do a quick little shout out. We actually got a new patron, Kathleen. You out here with a $5 tier. So thank you so much for becoming a patron. You're amazing.
Woot, woot, welcome.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, all the funds from Patreon goes to, you know, hosting costs and equipment and, you know, our movie nights. It goes towards all of that. So, you know, we really do appreciate it. But that's pretty much all the busy stuff. But, you know, with that being said, we're going to hop into our Sounds Like a Horror Movie for this week. You know, we out here.
What we got?
You know, today's story comes from the Creepy Encounter subreddit. One of my favorite subreddits. This one was written by Jay Renlita. This was posted a day ago, and it was titled, "Be Careful Who You Befriend." You know, be careful out here, you know, for this reason. This may happen to you. So, you know, sketchy people be out here. So let me go ahead and start this. This story happened when I was a junior in high school. I was a pretty friendly and curious person. 1 month into the fall semester, we got a new transfer student. He looked nervous, and he was seated behind me, and his name was Joe. I, of course, introduced myself to him, trying to ease the tension. I showed him what we learned so far. I helped him look over his class schedule. We had two classes and lunch period together. Naturally, we got to know each other and become friends. He's a quiet friend, but talked a lot around me. I assumed he's just comfortable around me. I made it clear that we're just friends, and he agreed. We started hanging out with my friends. Now, fast forward to spring break. I told Joe that I'm going out of town with my family. He seems disappointed that we can't spend the break together, but he was understandable. I ended up running into Joe in a restaurant. I didn't tell him where I was going, so I thought, wow, what a coincidence. He said he was visiting a family in the same town. Now, in senior year, Joe and I hung out at least once a week, then turned into two, then into three. I noticed we were spending too much time together. I want to make some time for my other friends too. That's when things started to change. I ran into Joe, or should I say I saw him, in the corner of my eye when I spent time with someone else. He becomes obsessive and clingy. The first two or three times, I didn't think much of it. It all becomes clear when I questioned him and he accidentally said that he followed me because he wants to make sure I was safe. I felt betrayed and creeped out, and he apologized and asked for forgiveness. I told him that I didn't want to be friends anymore, and he got angry and left. He didn't come to school for the next two or three days. My friends told me that he harassed them for snitching on him. He came back to school, and we pretended we didn't know each other. On my walk home, I hear Joe calling my name in a low and unfamiliar tone, but he was nowhere to be seen. I don't know why, but my gut told me to run as fast as I can. I kept running until I got home, and I made sure every door and window was locked. I'm convinced I was just being paranoid at this point. Then my phone screen lights up. Joe repeatedly called me. Then I hear Joe calling my name again. He's in front of my house now, banging on the door. I called my dad and tell him what happened. I pleaded to Joe to stop banging on the door. Everything went silent after 5 minutes, which feels like an eternity. The last word I heard from him, "You'll always be my friend." This issue was brought to the school, and Joe never showed up again. Now 4 years have passed. Just a few days ago, I got friend requests on two of my social medias. It was Joe. I blocked him and changed all my social media names to something else. I don't even live in the same town, nor in the same country. I'm now on the other side of the world. I can't help, but I feel like a scared 18-year-old me again. I'm not the friendly person I once was. I've become cautious around other people. And they added that I did report him and got a restraining order against him when that happened.
Okay, but look. See, this is why my granny used to always tell me you don't need friends. Your family are your friends. This is what she was talking about. This is what she was trying to protect me from. I knew when I heard the title, I was like, I'm not even going to say anything. Because I'm going to go on a rant before we even get into it. So I just left my mic on like shaking my head. Just like, bro. What?
You know, and the crazy thing is that I kind of saw myself in this post because I used to be that kid that would befriend like the quiet kid or the kid that was bullied or just like the kid that didn't have any friends. So I was like, I can totally see myself kind of getting caught up in the situation.
Just adopting people, so, just walking around adopting people.
You know,
I do that now. I did that as an adult recently, but I was like, yo,
you gotta be careful. Don't feel too good. Yeah, you can't. You gotta get to know people. Like I said, it's nice to, you know, I think she tried to be, you know, friendly. You don't want anyone to feel left out or bullied or whatever, but you know, if you get I'm pretty sure she felt like an energy around him, like when she would talk to him. I'm sure there was a vibe with him. Hence why she was like, we're only friends and I want to cut down our hangouts to like one day a week. Like, I'm sure there was something off about him to where
Start setting boundaries with your friends about how often or when you hang out. That's a warning sign. That's a red flag. Like, I've never had a friend where I was like, hey, you know what, maybe we shouldn't see each other for a while. Like, who does that?
Take a break.
No. I'd be ready to see my friends tomorrow. Like, you come back tomorrow.
Okay.
Next weekend.
I thought it was really interesting to have that follow-up of like, them trying to friend request her like 4 years later. And I'm like, yo, that probably triggered her majorly. And yes, oh my goodness, so absolutely. Terrifying, so scary.
Oh my God.
For them to have taken her back to like 8 years, 18 years old again, and just being brought back to that place. But yeah, the scary situation, you guys.
One of those Reddit stories that's like really believable, like why make it up? Like,
yeah, no, that's super like realistic. That legit could have happened. So yeah, you know, guys, just be careful with who you make friends with. You know, sometimes your best, yourself is your friend. Maybe you just stay be friends with yourself.
My granny tried to tell me, she said, you don't need to go out there and make friends, your family are your friends. Oh, like, she tried to tell me. I didn't listen. Granny, I hear you now, because there be people with friends that bang on their door talking about you'll always be my friend. God. Like, I don't need that in my life.
Scary, scary, scary stuff. But that's this week. Sounds like a horror movie.
Thank you, Mars. Thank you for sharing that terrifying story. And it kind of ties in with the sixth sense of having friends that you don't want around. Yeah. You know, like, he didn't ask for this. He's irritation. Like, look, y'all need to limit when you see me by like one
relax,
day a week.
Like, relax. Y'all need don't come to at chill. Me right, they were coming at yeah, him foul because
like... a lot of them were just doing residual yeah. ish mm-hmm. and it's like yeah. how do you have all these residual hauntings around you at one time? Like yeah. that don't even make sense. Mm-hmm. Gosh, his apartment building. A lot of people die in apartment buildings in Philly, apparently.
It's an old city.
It is.
Old city, so it has a lot of history, a lot of death.
All right, Gore Gang and friends and pals. That's the sixth sense, and our crazy ass sounds like a horror movie. Mars picked the craziest ones. I feel like mine don't be that bad.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Girl Scout cookies, dude selling Girl Scout sketchy. Cookies in the rain was sketchy. The worst one I had.
That's still sketchy, bro.
It okay. is. It is. It it's is sketchy, sketchy. But I mean, she had to get a restraining order. That's horrible. All right, you guys. Hopefully, we left you with enough scares and laughs to get you through your day, night, afternoon. Mm-hmm. What have you, and you'll join us again for another episode of Gore Friends. Ooh, we'll see you next time. All right,
all righty, bye
bye now.